Maybe.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it's... I honestly am not ready to be impressed with the movie.
Okay, that's fine.
Because I feel like at this point...
If you're not in the mindset, then we're not going to watch
it's more that I feel like this movie has become a trope enough where I'm not... It's going to be like, oh, if I had watched this when it came out, I'd be really into it. But I'm watching it now, I can kind of anticipate what's going to happen. And since it's old, some of the camera stuff and all, it's going to be a little dated, is what I'm expecting. Nothing you can say is going to change my perspective on that, sadly. I wish there was something...
Yeah. No, I know what you mean.
We'll see, dude. But, yeah, we'll try to see if we can figure something out after... Ooh, dude. Yorgos Lanthimos' filmmaking style is darkly calculated with deadpan cinematography and tiptoeing dialogue that's minimalism only adds to its strangeness. I haven't made this uncomfortable by a film since Salo or The 120 Days of Sodom. Holy shit, that's a crazy movie. Dogtooth offers a difficult, albeit alluring, glimpse into the world of isolationism, abuse, violence, and psychopathy. Holy. That's a ballsy movie. Yeah, put your headphones on. Also, plug them
in. Oh, I need to take my headphones back too so I can
do please do
shit better.
Do what? Boom!
I just want to do the rev stuff with headphones.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's already hooked up for me. You were expecting that.
Mm-hmm.
Let the Right One In is good.
I was just going to say, have you seen it?
No. Or, yes, I have.
Okay, cool.
1408 looks interesting. It's one of the better Stephen King movies
I've heard. What is it? I it sounds familiar. Yeah. What's it about?
It's John Cusack and Sam Jackson, a guy who doesn't believe in ghosts and everything, stays in a really haunted room.
Okay.
In a hotel where a lot of people have died.
Okay.
And pretty much shit hits the fan in a certain way. It's very psychological.
Interesting.
It's not a... Yeah, it's one of the better... Stephen King movies.
Cool. Yeah, there's been a lot of bad ones. The bar is not super high, but I understand.
What are your thoughts on Children of the Corn as a movie?
Not bad. Worth one watch.
Yeah.
Worth a single viewing.
I don't think it's a good film, but I don't think it was bad. A lot of people say it's bad.
Well, like, I'm sure when it comes to, like, really analyzing the best stuff ever, it's not on the good end of the list, but, like...
I mean, it's not...
Again, it's about expectations. I think the big thing is everyone goes into, like... When it comes to any form of entertainment, people tend to compare it to everything they've ever put in.
Right.
They try to compare it to all the movies they've ever watched. But if you try to see what it was trying to do, what the genre is, what the time period is, what the social needs are, what the director wanted, with those things in mind, to me, it allows you to enjoy more. Because I'm not comparing this band to every band I've ever listened to, but when it comes to folk music, it's one of the better ones, so I like them, that kind of thing.
And that's why at Tuned In, we take everything out of context and look at it as its own.
It's true. The idea, in my opinion, is the idea of maximalism as opposed to minimalism. I don't want to I want to have the largest I can amount of all these different forms of entertainment. So the best way to do that is to adjust I'm going to adjust my expectations for each one to maximize the probability I'm going to like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and some people are like, why? I mean, if it's not good, you shouldn't like it. But like, what's the benefit of not liking a piece of entertainment? Nothing. It's a waste of your time.
Right.
It's the only end result. But if you adjust your expectations, you might like it more. And if you like it more, then it's more worth it. So I try to
You have to have an open mind.
Change my mind. Yeah. Open mind. Change your mindset and be ready for
You can't go for the same. If you're looking for the same meaning or intent in every thing that you watch or listen to, it's just you're going to let down.
And a lot of people do that. Like they compare every horror movie to the best one they've ever seen. And it's whoa, they're different types of horror.
Hereditary and Psycho are not the same thing.
Yeah, and if you try to compare them, people that watch modern stuff and then try to compare it to old stuff, you're not going to like the old stuff because it is boring comparatively. Because back then, even with, just with nothing more than the idea of what was legal, things like sex and romance, things like horror and fear. Well, it
depends on what you're talking about and how old you're talking about.
Well, I'm saying if you're looking at old movies, you couldn't show as much blood. You couldn't show as much romance. So some of that stuff had to be more dialogue-based. And back then, audiences didn't want to see action sequences and things. So that's things that if you look through a modern lens, it's not going to be as good. But if you look through it through the lens of back then, you go, oh, this is a really cool foundational movie. I think that's just a big difference that a lot of people don't do.
How many times have you seen Psycho? Because I watched it again the other day.
It's good.
One of my favorites, I'd say, honestly.
It's good.
Birds, hot take. The Birds is not... It's an interesting story, but it's just the way that they tell it is so not interesting.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck about the characters.
Have you seen Vertigo?
No,
that's pretty good.
Jimmy Stewart, right?
In theaters, couldn't tell.
James Stewart, the guy from It's a Wonderful Life.
Maybe.
Wow.
Sorry.
Big actor.
Don't care. He's dead. Doesn't matter.
That's a crazy way to look at it.
It's true, though. Why would I care what his name is?
I mean, he did.
I respect his acting. Don't care.
He did Vertigo, Rear Window, It's a Wonderful Life. Fucking.
They all look the same, dude. They do. Old white guys acting in movies. Grant, there's Jimmy four Stewart. Of them. I'm sorry. There's four white dudes in movies. They're all the same person.
In the 40s, yeah.
30s through 50s movies.
Same four guys.
Actors had the same impact on me as 2000s alternative rock bands like The Script and The Fray. I can't tell who's who. They're good. They're filling their niche well, but I don't know who's who. You're all, it's very general.
Come on, the guy from The Fray has a very distinct voice.
Okay, The Script, The Fray, and what's the other one? There's another one that's...
The Killers?
No.
Killers is cool.
Not what I'm talking about. Script, Fray, and there's one of the ones that are all the same fucking...
See, I don't know what you mean, because I can pick out The Fray's vocals and everything.
And Train is the other one.
Train's also very distinct.
No, they are if you like them and you listen to them, but they're very similar sounds over when it comes to the idea of 2000s music. They're very similar. Coldplay. Any one of them could. Coldplay is the same thing, except Coldplay does it the best, has their own sound the most of those four. But in my opinion, any of those four bands could do any of the other band songs, and they would come out at least as good, and it wouldn't really impact it too much, in my personal opinion, given what I've listened to by all of
those. I agree with you on that point, but I also... Like, I can tell The Fray Train. And I don't have any of those bands saved in my phone.
Yeah, I don't truly get confused. Like, I couldn't guess. Okay. Usually I could, especially because most of them are so famous, you just know.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, really, like, in terms of historical context, in 50 years, no one will be able to tell the difference between them.
Sure.
Just like with those fucking actors.
We should upload this as a bonus episode.
This is our best work yet.
Put it on Patreon.
We can do all of... I have all that stuff saved, man.
Yeah, no, that's why I'm saying
we can start doing let's all those talking. Cuts. Well, you want to start the episode first, or?
No, let's keep talking.
Right. Now it's going to be forced.
No, let's stop the... Let's start. I want to watch Us, like, later.
Tonight?
Yeah, I'd be down, because I've only seen it once, and I feel like I should see it again.
Maybe, unless if we can find something else, sure. If not, no. Yes. That's a good... I want to, so that's a good option, yeah.
It's an option, yeah.
All right, so let's get it started! Ha!
Hello, guys. Welcome to the Tuned In Podcast. My name is Justin Ketchai, and this is my co-host.
I am co-host, the general co-host of the podcast. We can't do co-host jokes every episode.
That's a funny bit.
John Sherburn, and today we're going to be talking to you for our last installment, just squeezing it in here, our last installment of the Science Fiction Month, known to many as
November. Sci-Fi Month. Oh.
Or Sci-Fi Month. We're really deep into the sci-fi. So for today, we decided to do a little different. We had done a short film, done a movie, done a TV show. What else will we do? Well, folks, we're here to tell you. Today, we listened, just like you're now listening, to a broadcast. We listened to a radio show, a famous radio show, a famous science fiction radio show, known as, Justin...
War of the Worlds, yes. Produced by Orson Welles and CBS.
Yes, the War of the Worlds, which was a short broadcast... That was put out on Halloween in 1938.
Halloween Eve, mind you.
Yes, the 30th, the day before Halloween, Hallows Eve Eve, by Columbia Broadcasting Network. It's originally, The War of the Worlds was a story that came out in 1898 by H.G. Wells, not to be confused with the future director that would go on to make this before he was a director, Orson Welles.
Quick history, if this War of the Worlds broadcast ever happened, he would have never made Citizen Kane. So.
Dude. If it didn't happen, he wouldn't have made... Yeah, he wasn't like...
He got so much publicity from this.
It's the only reason he became a filmmaker. It's the only reason he became successful, really. Before that, he was a relatively unknown actor.
He was a popular local radio actor.
Yes, and that's about it. And then this... His adaptation, he wrote. He did a lot of the acting, too. He helped produce it. I mean, a lot of this was him. And it got so popular because the news outlets decided to take the story and run with it. And the story, Justin, what happened on that night?
So pretty much in the wake of this broadcast, the way that it was set up was it was pretty much a broadcast about aliens taking over the world and killing people. And there were only a few disclaimers throughout the entire broadcast. There was one at the beginning, one kind of in the middle, closer to the 2/3 mark, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
Just the before the third act, maybe. And then... one at the end, directly given by Orson Welles. And for that reason, a lot of people tuned in at the wrong time.
Tuned in.
And thanks. And nice. And they started panicking. Now, here's where John and I had a little bit of a difference in knowledge of this thing. I've been taking a class currently, actually, where we talked about it and we had a discussion about this. And my professor led on that this was a much bigger national event than it actually was.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know this.
I didn't think like...
Everyone was...
I didn't think that cars were on fucking fire and shit because they were freaking out about aliens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he made it seem like there was so much...
outcry and stuff.
Yeah, just in the wake of this broadcast, and everybody was going crazy.
So the truth behind... It's like he's half, right? So what happened is this broadcast goes out. The broadcast is for a good portion of it. Is broken down like a real news broadcast. It's like this fictional broadcast where they start having music beds and they have like the weather reports and stuff. And then slowly they start to, noticed some weird activity in the sky. You know, can all the observatories start taking a look? It's stuff like that.
On the surface of Mars.
Yeah. And then eventually it grows into this much bigger thing where there's aliens that crash landed and everyone's. And so it kind of built up. What happened is on that eve, they say less than 1 million people in the country had any sort of belief that this was actually happening. They said it was roughly 20% of the audience really at any point went, oh my God, are aliens here? So it wasn't that huge of an event. It was relatively small, relatively contained. But the news outlets really picked it up and ran with it after. Like they had this broadcast on the, you know, CBS or whatever it was, whatever it's called.
CBS.
And it's caused outcry. There are people freaking out. And they really ran with it. And then it did cause an outcry in terms of people saying like they shouldn't have done that. But it wasn't as much of a, you know, people were freaking out and going crazy. Yeah. So it was really big. It was a crazy event. It was the first media incident of its kind, and it did cause a lot of issues with people, namely because most of these people had never had any cause to not believe the news before. So if they came in during a time that sounded the least like a radio play and more like a broadcast, they would mostly be confused. But a lot of them eventually went, oh, okay, I understand now.
We're coming at you live from Grover's Mill, New Jersey, and there is fire everywhere. These tentacle things are...
It's a solid performance. I read the book when I was younger. The book's a lot different. The book starts a few months in advance of this thing. Based on the book, there's like a lot of activity beforehand. There's a lot of like lead up as opposed to this where it's like happening in one night. In the book, there's months of lead up. Slowly, they notice like Mars is closer to the Earth than it's ever been before.
Weird.
They notice stuff like that. Then it gets into the idea that we see with the army and stuff, and they destroy like everything. And then,
are they similar type aliens?
Big metal, think like Incredibles monster, like
tentacles.
So what it is there's like big metal arms with like a ball at the top of their walking around, shooting heat lasers out of their eyes, pretty much. And that's not the aliens; those are just the aliens' machines.
Right.
There's a lot of parallels, in my opinion, between when radio or book or whatever. There's a lot of there's a big back and forth and a big connection to the idea of like British colonialism. We colonized like the third world, and it's to me there's a lot of parallels to them colonizing us and us reacting similarly to how native populations would act when we invaded them.
Right. Yeah.
So to me, that's a huge connection point, and I think that that's more shown in the book, because in the book it takes place in England, not America.
Right.
So like there's stuff like that where it's like, oh, there's even more connections there. But the radio play is the same effect, I think, just for radio. It's a little shorter of a time frame, a little quicker, a little more first person perspective-y. How did you like it overall before we get into like the actual structure? We're not really going to talk about all the plot. We will do overviews of each section of the plot.
Yeah, I mean, this whole thing was just a broadcast of like a series of events, really. Yes. And then in the third act, it kind of broke into one man's testimony.
Yes.
So there's really not much like plot to discuss here. It's just kind of like the whole event, rather.
I say we break it up into like three parts and then from there discuss each part as its own thing. So the first section that is important to talk about is the idea of the news broadcast. It's not necessarily chronologically, it intertwines, but in general, the idea of the people in the news station. How did you like that portion of
I liked how they went in and out of... So the first thing that you start to hear is they're playing like music. And it's just like they frame it like, oh, you're listening to a music radio station, and then it's interrupted by these announcements from observatories and things like that. And then eventually it just declines into a constant coverage of these events.
Yeah.
You know, so I like the way that they did that, because, I mean, as far as I can tell, it's hard to put ourselves in those shoes, too. So we weren't around. I think
a lot of it is cultural and stuff.
Exactly. So, like, I mean, we can think about it, obviously. This is a time when people didn't have many TVs. I think TVs were, like, literally just invented.
I think, if anything, they were they're not a consumer item yet. Right. Those are not a household thing.
You would go to a Nickelodeon theater or some shit.
Maybe, yeah.
This is a time when people just got all their media through people talking.
Sound. The good old days, if you're people like us, podcasters.
Yeah.
We'd be making a dime a dozen if we lived in these times.
So putting yourself in those shoes, I think it was a very interesting way that they handled it. Going in and out of the music station to the observatory. I think it was like the best way that you could frame it.
Yeah.
If you're trying to tell a story over the radio to that effect, you know?
I'm a sucker for period pieces. Yeah. I've listened to the first half of this probably a half dozen times. I've only actually finished it two or three, but I've listened to the first part a couple times.
Yeah.
And I love it because it gives me that feeling of I'm being there. It feels like I'm listening in. You have the idea of the music being played. That's so natural. And it's almost comedic, the effect of the music will play for 20 seconds and then go back to the update and they're like, actually it's this. Now back to music until we give any more updates. They go back to the music and they cut instantly back to that kind of thing. To me, had an almost comedic effect. But I liked hearing the juxtaposition of the radio announcer, the news updates, the weather updates, the music going back and forth. And then it slowly goes into this pandemonium of like what's happening in the field. And each person they cut to eventually gets killed. And eventually, like, we stopped receiving broadcasts now from the field. We have to go to somebody else. Right. First, listen to the music of blah, blah, blah. And I loved that. It felt so intriguing.
It's very immersive.
And, well, it's interesting because the effect it has now is so different than then. The effect it has at the time is, it has a similar effect of, like, a Blair Witch Project or a VHS where it's, like, it feels real to them. So to them, it's like, you know, how much of this is fake? How much of this is a news broadcast? If you tune in like right from another channel, you're tuning in the middle of a musical piece and they cut to some weird news about something happening in New Jersey. That's interesting. That's one side of it. And that's a side that we don't actually get.
Right.
Because we know. Looking at it from the present perspective, us, it's more like, imagine a world where in the 30s things were invaded. This is what the world's like before they invaded, just for a snapshot. So to us, it almost gives us like, this cool period piece. That's not the effect that Orson Welles wanted to have. It's just the effect that it does have nowadays. And it wouldn't, if it started just with the invasion, we wouldn't get that.
Right.
But the fact that they tried to make it look like a regular broadcast in the future now gives us that idea that we're being immersed. Back then, they wouldn't call it immersive. They'd just call it what life is like. It's the equivalent of if we had like it's the equivalent of right now if you had like this like Snapchat video series that started off with like friends doing their random day-to-day stuff, and then it slowly turned into crazy science fiction aliens outside.
Yeah.
And it would give us the ideas like, is this actually this is on like the Snapchat breaking news? It's like a CNN app on Snapchat news. Is this really, what the hell? And you're like looking it up and there's like a news site's reporting and you're like, what's going on? It's the equivalent of that.
Right.
We don't see it like that.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah.
But that is what it would be like for today.
That's
kind
a great
of thing.
Take. I didn't think about it that
way. Yeah, and I think that's my opinion, one of my favorite parts about talking about this is that the effect has changed so much over the decades that you just haven't noticed. The second part, I don't think we have as much to talk about with it. I think for the second part of the broadcast, this is interlaced with the first part. It's in the field of like the crash site for where these aliens came from.
Yeah.
Talk about it for a minute. I don't think there's a lot to talk about. It's relatively concise, but it is a very cool addition to have the in the field on the street reporter.
Yeah. So they have this like on the scene reporter talking about the crash site of this cylindrical, shiny, sleek, silent object.
Yeah.
And it had like a screw top, they said.
Yep.
And it like screwed open, and then it's just this reporter like talking about the appearance of these aliens.
This is the most terrifying thing I've seen in my entire life. It is pandemonium out here.
Honestly, one creepy visual that I... So, these aliens are described as being... having, like, tentacles. You said something about metal. I didn't catch that.
The aliens might have tentacles. What I'm thinking of is, like, classic image that's in all the movies, all the books, all the images, all the photos and stuff. Like, even the book cover. Very classic image. If you had to pick one image from War of the Worlds, it's the tall, it's like a metal ball in the sky with like four legs that's walking. That is what I thought they were talking about, the tentacles, because that is a very famous image that's been around since the 1800s.
So I didn't see that image. So
yeah, that's what I thought they were talking about, but they might have been talking about the actual aliens. I was under the impression that you didn't actually see the aliens too much, and most of it was them in their machines. But sure.
That could be possible.
I don't remember. I'm so sorry, listeners.
But one creepy visual that they kind of breeze by is that the guy says that their mouth is in like a V.
Yeah.
And it's like dripping slime. Yeah. And I'm like, a V is such like a sharp upward.
Yep.
Like us.
With, like, they open it weirdly, they breathe differently than us. They had eyes like snakes with green and stuff. So they definitely, I think this is them being almost like bear-like too.
I feel like the human visual of what the description of the aliens would be Vincent D'Onofrio in Full Metal Jacket bathroom scene.
That's funny. Yes. Yeah.
Seven round Full Metal Jacket.
Jeez, dude. I also think in my head there should be an accompanying radio broadcast that's from the aliens' perspective. So it would read similarly to our moon landing recordings, right? We've just landed on an extraterrestrial planet. We have no idea there's actually forms of life because they can't, just like we can't detect life on Mars, the aliens can't detect life on Earth because they don't know how to look for carbon-based life forms. Mm. So, like, there seems to be no sign of metal-born life on Earth, only carbon, you know, things, because to them that's not real life. They get there, right? They're, like, taking our first steps on a thing that's all being filmed, and then they step out, and there's these weird, strange beasts outside. They're standing, all of them. They're these small, wicked creatures with like fleshy skin that stretches. Their mouths contorted into shriek. They're shrieking and screaming, running everywhere. They're like literally horrified. The monster's like, "What the fuck?" It's really slow. It's like, this planet seems to be sucking me down into the grasp of the depths of the planet itself. Like, I'm imagining the equivalent broadcast. And I think it's so funny.
It is
like,
funny.
Like, back to some alien music. It's like, breaking news. Like, I'm imagining the opposite. And I think it's honestly even more funny than ours. We should make that.
What if, like...
We should not do this podcast.
But what if, like, the aliens are just people in the future, yo?
What if?
And they just time travel from Mars,
imagine,
bro.
Imagine that, dude.
That's crazy,
they look,
man,
that different from us. That would be crazy.
Yeah. They're in giant metal costumes. And they're like, we gotta, like... help these people. They don't know what they're doing to
they
their
don't
own
know
society.
What they're doing to the Earth. So I think the second part is the least impressive of the three.
Yeah.
It's not that it's bad. It's just that, like,
second part,
it's the same thing kind of over and over with different things happening. But there was building tension. But like when it comes to discussion and analysis, you can get it kind of all done by talking about any individual cut to it. You know what I mean? It was really cool though. Just the idea of like the mounting terror. They didn't really, you'd think they'd freak out more than they did. A lot of them, like, he's talking, he's like, they're killing 14 of us. And he's still standing there, like, recording it. But I did like the idea that, like, it wipes out the entire army and stuff. And they get these different testimonials from people and all that.
That was one part where I was like, okay, even if I was in 1938 and I was believing it up to this point, the moment that they said 7,000 people have died from this, like, one town.
Air raid sirens.
I was like, all right, man.
You'd expect
7,000 troops
air raid sirens
is what they said.
Stuff, yeah.
So they said, like, 7,000 troops after, like, no sound effects or anything. They were just like, oh, we've just gotten a report in. Also, the speed of these reports is so impressive.
Yeah, it's all very quick. I think it's all stated that if you're, like, living in the Hudson Valley area, you wouldn't actually believe it, because you'd know it. If that was happening, you'd hear it, you'd see it, you'd feel it, you'd be told about it. But like, let's say you're in Wyoming or something.
Oh yeah.
Like, let's say you're in on the other side of the country.
So it was a country ride broadcast, right?
I don't actually know. I'm sure it was. I just don't know what that actually means.
If it wasn't,
like, I don't know how far the radio broadcasts actually go back then. I don't remember. But if you're not in the New York area, though, you might believe this because you wouldn't be hearing about it outside of this broadcast. This is breaking news.
I'm just thinking in terms of it was CBS, big production.
You'd assume
it would get... was a small, like, church. Yeah. I think they did it at a church, right?
Sure.
Yeah, so I think they like, produced it at, like,
big some... cities might have gotten, like, maybe in Chicago they're
No, like, they could have broadcasted it to a certain point, and then that station, like, rebroadcasted it on a certain airwave, and it just could have gone like that across the whole country.
And to my favorite part of the whole thing is the last section. The last part...
The last monologue, you mean?
No, the last, like, third. We talked about them in the radio station, we talked about them in the field, and then the last part, when it comes to me breaking it down, the third section is when they stop doing a radio broadcast, and this section is... pretty much like the writings reflecting to the past of a guy who was involved in this whole, like, end of the world situation.
And this starts right after the second.
Halfway into the third.
I was going to say this whole thing, this whole part that John's about to talk about
section
comes just after the second CBS disclaimer.
Like, yes.
This is a broadcast. It was the first one in like 40 minutes.
Yes.
It was the second.
It's like halfway through.
Right before the third act.
Just so you know. So. Yeah. So then this act starts, and it's pretty much this guy who's like, thinks he's the last man on earth, pretty much. Because he's experienced nothing but destruction. He's seen the death of so many people. He's been kind of wandering. And I think it's a really poetic section because it leaves behind the idea of this is a news broadcast. And now it's the idea of what this individual's seeing and thinking and hearing. And it gets really intense. And I loved it. A lot of the book focuses on this part.
That's what makes me want to read the book.
Yeah, book's good. I didn't finish it. I read it when I was young enough where I was a little over my head. I was reading it and I was kind of understanding it, but not really grasping everything. Sure. So I definitely should go back and read it because I do love me some science fiction.
I have difficulty reading things that old, though. I tried reading F. Scott Fitzgerald. I couldn't do it.
There's a lot of... it's interesting because there are a lot of different types of writing at that time. But yeah, it's very much realist, very slow, very descriptive. Because you're going out of, like, the pastoral writing style and stuff. If you're getting into, like, literature.
Yeah, yeah.
You're in the middle of the realist movement, and you're right... You're in the idea of, like, the pastoral art movement. So, like, it's a very slow, descriptive, metaphorical, realistic thing, like East of Eden and stuff. Yeah. There's some really... Like, East of Eden's one of my favorite books. I read all, like, 800 pages or whatever in, like, a week. I was so into the book. It is really old and outdated, but still, like, gets you, grips you somehow. But nowadays, most of the things that we take in are more the idea of postmodernism, and that's so much more abstract. It's so much more like you can do whatever you want, and so a lot of older novels are hard to read because it's such a different world of story. It's such a different, like, approach.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a sidebar on books. If you guys like books, but yeah, so I like this third part a lot. Do you have anything specific that stuck out? I had a couple of things specifically that stuck out to me. Did you have anything that you want to talk about specifically?
So just like as a piece of media, I'd say, I was more entertained by the first section of the news broadcast. I thought it was like very clever the way that they did it because they were using the things in their time that they know people listen to.
Mm-hmm.
They were taking advantage of that and using it to their advantage and telling a story, and pretty much looking into what would happen if this kind of thing went down in some capacity, you know,
what it would actually look like.
Yeah, but I did really like and then the second act kind of lost me, and the first act I could be like, damn, I can see how some people were freaked out by this.
Sure.
Second act I'm like, okay, it's getting less believable.
Sure.
But maybe some people like believed it because they had an adrenaline high or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the third act, it just totally like broke down the whole thing for me. And it was a lot more poetic.
Yes.
And a lot less realist.
I also think if you're going into this video, if this is that thing that made everyone think the world was ending, you're going to be disappointed.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's not what it is. But yeah, yeah, it definitely is a different vibe once you actually watch it than what you're like or listen to it than what you might expect if you're not.
So my review of the third act would be... I enjoyed it for the poetry in it. I think you might have gotten more out of it than I did, but the last little disclaimer and monologue from Orson Welles I really enjoyed too.
I liked it, yeah.
Yeah.
So with me for the third part, there was a couple things. In the book, the connection between comparing humans to animals is really big in the book. The idea that the Martians view us like we would view animals. is really interesting to me, because humanity's driven such a wedge between us and animals, even though we are pretty much the same. We're just the best of the animals.
Talking about Ishmael.
Exactly. So in the book, it goes to be like, yeah, but if an alien species came down that was so much more advanced than us, they would see us just like another deer. Fucking and gorilla. I think it's really interesting, and so in the book, there's more of that. The last part breaks it down the most into the idea of us as animals in two folds. What happens is it's this guy walking by himself. He meets another man, and the two of them have a dialogue. I think the main part of it's their dialogue, which to me, a lot of it is dry just because it is outdated. It's two guys in the 30s having a dialogue about what's going to happen. But there are parts, I don't know how much of this you actually soaked in, because we were listening to this like in my room together, and I'd listened to it previously with headphones by myself.
Yeah, yeah.
But they talk about, and this is what connects the most to the books, the idea that humans are going to be bred and stuff. And it gets some of the most sci-fi, like we're going to be the best, the ones that won't run, the office workers, the people that care about trains being late, those people are going to be kidnapped and bred and turned into like breeding slaves for these creatures.
Right, yeah.
And I think, and this guy was like, it's almost like the narrator at this point meets this crazy guy whose conspiracy theory in the end of the world, if the apocalypse happened, the crazies are still around. He's like, they're enslaving us. We have to prescribe to the new world that we live in. It was crazy, but it was really interesting to me.
Right.
And then there was this one line, a lot of good poetry, but this one line in my mind sums up really well what an apocalypse is like. He talks about how he hasn't seen a living thing in days. Mm-hmm. He thinks he's the last man on earth. He's walking by himself. And then for the first time, what feels like forever, he sees his first sign of life. He sees a small red squirrel running across like the branch of a tree. And the squirrel sees him and he sees the squirrel. And he says, finally, I notice a living creature, a small red squirrel in a beech tree. I stare at him in wonder. He stares back at me. I believe at that moment, the animal and I shared the same emotion, the joy of finding another living being. I push on north. And it was just very, I don't know, it felt very like simple and yet exactly like he's this guy, quiet, walking, surviving. He got his like backpack on.
Yeah.
And he's a squirrel running around. And it's almost a reminder of life before the apocalypse for a minute. You see a squirrel running, you're like, oh, cool, squirrel. And he sees it and then it's just, he's almost overcome by this emotion, but it's like, oh my God, something else is alive. It's not just me. There's something else out there. And he also compares himself in that moment. He's as small and insignificant as a squirrel would be.
Right.
And it's hard because we, I think humans, all think of ourselves as the ability to achieve greatness. Where animals, like, they're going to die at some point no matter what. They're going to live, run around, eat, sleep, and then eventually get hit by a car or killed by another squirrel or die of old age or whatever. Mm-hmm. But we don't think of ourselves like that. But we should, because that is all that we really do. We run around and we try to live for as long as we can, doing what we can to stay alive, and then we die.
We have hands so we can build more things and make more things, but like...
But that's just fancy nut gathering.
Oh, you know? Exactly.
Yeah, and no. It's,
you know, it's a great way to say it. That's what I was thinking.
And so I loved that. That little line to me is one of my favorite parts of the whole thing, just because it felt like, oh, that's really good apocalypse writing right in that moment. And I love apocalypse stuff, so I just found that to be very interesting.
Fancy just, nut gathering. You know,
it is.
No, it's a great way to
getting
say it.
Getting our nut, getting that money, trying to live in a bigger tree, better tree with leather lazy boys. Like, it's fine, but you know, that's really all that we are doing. And I think it's interesting. So I guess, let's talk about the end a little bit, like the Orson Welles' little speech back up to everybody.
So he pretty much ends everything by saying, now I'm out of character.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I feel like people should realize that he played like five characters during this whole thing.
Yeah.
He was just like, hey, this is just a show. It's all good. We're recording here from CBS, and this is the studio's way of pretty much saying boo to everybody.
Yeah, it was funny. Like, we can't go outside and steal your garden gnomes, but what we can do is give you this little scare. It was kind of a cute, wholesome little way
to end. It was a 1938 way to say, we tricked ya.
Yeah.
On Halloween.
I think the quote from there that we both were like, yeah! And I was waiting for you because I had heard it the other night. And
when I've heard it before too.
When he said it, I was like, this is awesome. So goodbye, everybody. And remember the terrible lesson you learned tonight, that grinning, glowing, globular invader of your living room is an inhabitant of the pumpkin patch. And if your doorbell rings and nobody's there, that was no Martian. It's Halloween.
Dun, dun, dun.
And it's just it was just a cool little badass, like, we got you little bitches. Band. Yeah, it was cool. It was it's a fun broadcast. It must have been very fun to work on it. And it's
so fun.
I'm imagining it's just this like late night in a church at like 8 o'clock at night. These people doing, they're like talking.
Have you seen pictures of Orson Welles on the set?
I have seen a few and they're fun.
There's the one where it goes like radio silence when one of the guys die in the field. Yeah. And he's like holding his hands up to everybody and like looking around, making sure nobody says anything because they're trying to act like
silence.
Radio silence. Yeah.
I think it was back then so much of the stuff was more impressive because it's all done live. It's all, and even the cuts, if you are cutting stuff, you're literally cutting the filming assembly. Yeah. You have one shot. It's not polished. So it feels so much more real and so much more like live music and art than like what we do today.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is just, I don't know. It's really fun. I love this. I try to listen to this around Halloween time every year. I love like this in the fall. It's a very fun radio show, and it was a really fun. I had a really good time listening to it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too.
I was taking a run indoors last night. The sunset was beautiful, so I went outside and I just ran and then walked for a bit, just listening to this as the sun goes down. And then it was like dark out when I was into the apocalypse section. I was outside, sitting by the pond that's near where we live.
Yeah.
And like the water was black, and the ducks were just silhouettes, but they were all flying and playing and moving around. Wow, it was a very cool, like, just, it was a
really you think about the world and human nature.
And I was alone, like dark, didn't see any people, so it was just a very perfect analogy. I really had it was really fun listening. See a red squirrel?
Yeah. It's red, it's like burgundy.
It's on fire.
No, it's not.
Oh.
Somebody dyed its fur red.
Aw, sad. Dyes of poison.
Food coloring.
Realistic. I'm not food, says the squirrel, as he dies.
Hey, I'm not food.
It's real this time. Oh, God, hell is there's no heaven for squirrels. It's just black.
All squirrels believe in heaven until they die, and they don't have heaven.
All squirrels believe in heaven. Yeah. Like they have a better.
Like obviously
they got better numbers than us. Like if everybody was Christian, and the problem is they don't have heaven or hell, but they still have eternal consciousness. Yeah. It's just the black void forever.
Yeah. No, but they don't think it's that.
They just sit, their brains just work, and they're like, what's here? There's nothing. There's nothing after life. There's nothing but my thoughts, my mind. Scary.
Because I'm thinking of that Rick and Morty subplot that I hope they readdress.
What
subplot? The squirrels take over.
Oh, the squirrel That's bit. That's crazy. They're never readdressing that.
Was it in a different world?
It was in...
Are they in a different reality
It was
now?
In...
And I just didn't put that together.
Morty's memories.
Yeah.
Also, the show, they've been through 100 realities.
I know.
The
reality that they're in now is not the one that they started in.
No. And there's even had a couple jumps since then. There's actually a fan theory, too, that when they go to the Chips and Blitz place, when they play the different games and stuff like that, you get to play, like, you remember they go, like, Blitz and Chips? It's like this, like Chuck E. Cheese type place, and they play these different games. There's one game where you get to, like, be a person, and he's, like, a rug salesman and shit. I don't know. There's an episode where they do that, and there's a part where, and it's only Rick and Morty's. It's when they first introduce all the Ricks and all the Mortys.
Sure, yeah.
It's the first time you see evil Morty. That episode, there is a fan theory that Morty got flipped, that got switched from Morty in that episode, and the Morty that Rick has is not the same Morty. That was a big fan theory like 3 years ago when it came out.
Wow, okay.
But, also, you're going to like this. You're welcome. It's small.
Are we just chatting?
But there's another... Mr. Poopy Butthole scene in the newest episode that came
Hell
out.
Hell yeah. I was about to ask about it.
Yeah. We'll get back to the show. But yeah, if you wondered if we like Rick and Morty, we do. I am about ready to wrap the episode up and get into some of our reviews and stuff. First, I do want to say that I just love... Another part that I love about this at the end is before they wrap it up, what pretty much they establish is that the aliens die because their bodies aren't used to disease happening. And so they all get disease and die. And so then the world rebuilds itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the world rebuilds itself like back into regular society. Because it hadn't been years. It had been weeks or something, right? So they reestablish schools and buildings and laboratories. All these things go back to normal. And the guy is kind of writing this from his study as like a memoir. And I thought that was crazy. The idea that some people weren't touched by this. People that were born after this event view it like a 9/11 kind of thing, where it's like, oh, it's a memory, but it's not real.
Yeah.
But then there's people out there that like the narrator who survived in the apocalypse.
Yeah.
And they just saw dead bodies and aliens. They're like, oh, there's no more society. everything's over. Those people are fucked. Like they, right. they'll never be regular people again. They're gonna have the worst PTSD of all time.
Oh yeah.
And like they'll see kids running around like nothing happened. And it's to me such a parallel to real life, but so much more intense. Like Vietnam survivors that are like, you guys don't understand how dark life can be, right? Like it's regular civilians that have that. Yeah, I watched my hometown go up in flames. I'm one of four survivors. Like, fuck.
Yeah.
I think it's such heavy a shit, big, yeah. heavy concept. That's my favorite takeaway from this entire story.
Definitely.
That's my favorite takeaway is they rebuild, and then that almost fades into memory. Yeah. Slowly, it would just fade into memory. Very strange to me.
Along with this broadcast with most of the general public. Like, oh yeah, War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
Is that like where everybody freaked out?
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like a
cultural memory a little bit that's imprinted itself. But I will say, good job to Orson Welles. This is a very big moment in entertainment history. It's taught in classes.
And his career in radio, in cinema.
It's a huge piece to just entertain history in the 20th century. One of the biggest, I'd say, like really when you think about it.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm really glad he did this because I never thought we would on this show. Like a few weeks ago, I would never have believed you if you had said we'd be doing it. But I'm glad we listened to this and everything.
Yeah.
Ratings.
It's
a hard one to do ratings for because it is different. So how do you want to do them?
Plot-wise. Do you just want to say like content-wise?
I'd say we should break it up into believability since that was such a big thing.
Okay.
Believability, plot development and structure... the idea of like not audio quality from a technical perspective, but audio quality of like just like the different aspects of radio they put into this,
mm-hmm.
and then an overall rating is what I would do. Do you agree with that for the rating process?
So you said believability, plot development,
and then like the idea of the different things they had in it, the music and the new the weather and all that stuff.
Using their present.
The different styles within the medium they used.
Yes.
It was all audio, it was all radio, but the different things they added to it to make it more believable, then, separate from the plot itself.
And then the overall rating?
And then overall.
Okay, so I'd give believability like a 4.
Yeah?
If you're looking at the whole thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's hard too, because we're seeing this from our lens of like, we know it's fake, we've seen stuff like this before. I do think that, again, the earlier you tune in, the more believable it is.
Oh, of course.
I think at the top of it, it starts at like a 7.
Yeah.
And then it breaks its way down, obviously, into like a 3 or a 4. But I thought it was... I think it's very fun.
Oh, it is very fun.
It's very fun to like... Just the idea that there's like, you know, 700, 800,000 people.
Of course.
Like, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah.
They turn them off.
It
freaking
was,
out.
It would be an event comparable to like 9/11.
Even more so, it would be like the end of civilization, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, you know? by the end of the broadcast.
Oh, but you mean like even like in New Jersey,
the fact that they say 7,000 people died and.
Thing is, it changes everything though, because it's like aliens are real. They're in the planet next to us, and they're invading. That's crazy.
Oh yeah.
It would like So it is very interesting. I wonder what the worst people respond. I wonder if there's anyone who's who had like a psychotic breakdown that night.
Oh.
Because and then like they never recovered. I wonder how many and who.
Yeah, I mean,
if they ever told their stories.
A couple, at least one person I know committed suicide.
Really?
At least one.
I never heard of that. That's interesting. I'll look at the play.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I mean,
well, like
sucks, but like
sucks for that one or like the couple people. But
right, right.
It's just a joke.
This is a joke.
It's like if they're doing one of those, like, it's just a prank, bros, and it's the one where the guy's in, like, the snowman ass costume. They walk by, he jumps out and scares him in the snowman costume. It's like if one of those people ran and just kept running. Because I thought the snowman was real. I thought it was a real evil snowman. And they ran and ran and ran. And they go and duck into an alley, and they're just like, and they never recover and kill themselves. You're like, dude, give it a day. Just give it a day or two.
Yeah.
And realize that this is all right.
Yeah.
All right, so plot. How do you like the actual plot of this story?
I thought it was, like, the plot content I liked a lot. If you're taking believability out of it, I'd probably give it, like, a 6 or 7, maybe.
Yeah. Cool. I think it's weaker than the book in terms of strength of the plot, but I think if they tried to adapt closer to the book, it wouldn't have worked as well as a radio show.
Yeah.
I'm going to say... A 7 it is dated. The storytelling structure is not really done anymore.
Like I said in the beginning of the podcast, we take things out of context.
Yeah, we try to
we're trying to place ourselves as if we are actually listening to it.
Do you mean put
it.
Things in context?
For this, yes. I meant out of context.
Of like other things you've
of
seen.
Of other yes. entertainment and media.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah, given this is a 1930s broadcast, given this is a radio show, all those things, I think it was pretty strong for the topic. I'd probably say it was a 7. I liked the kind of the time jump and the perspective change, mm-hmm. but I also like all the other aspects of it. And so I'd rate it like a 7. Using that as a segue, how did you like all the other mediums they put into this? The music and the people and the...
That's probably the thing I liked most about it. Especially the first act, when it was going in between the... different news stations, the breaking news
yeah.
and the music and it was framing
going into
it.
The scientists and
of
stuff.
Of course,
all
yeah.
that stuff.
And that was the most believable part. I'd probably give it an 8.
Yeah, I'd probably say 8.5. I thought it was so fun.
Yeah.
All the different things they do.
You can't do something like that today.
Well, it's such a weird mix because you have the idea of a fake real broadcast. You have the idea of music being played into it. You have the idea of fake professionals using jargon that you've never heard before about mm-hmm. the Mars and stuff like that, the stars and everything. And then you also cut into the man on the street as things break into pandemonium. Then you get into the last broadcast the station will ever do. We're here till the lights go out, folks. Then it gets into...
like a narrative.
Then it's just this one guy. Then it's like a 5-minute conversation with somebody. But then it's all just in his head and he's reminiscing about it.
Yeah.
All of those aspects to me were so fun and they played with so many different things. And most other people would only do one or two of those things at a time. So mm-hmm. But it was never cramped. So yeah, I liked that a lot. I'd say 8.5. I'd say it's my star. It's the strongest piece to
Yeah, yeah.
Overall, I'd probably give this a 7.
I agree.
We're always on the same page. Pretty much.
Well, I just take my lowest and my highest
yeah,
and
try to
in
average
the middle.
Them roughly.
Yeah.
I'd say it's 7 just because it's, I think it does what it wanted to do really well. I think the reason it's honestly probably lower is because its reputation precedes it. The reputation you get is like, this is going to be the most like ultra believable thing ever. But then like, everyone,
well, no, I didn't go in with that.
Not you, but like a general audience, what you know about World of the Worlds, if you don't know anything else, is that it tricked a bunch of people into thinking the world was ending. So I think when we at today's age go into it with that as our only thought in mind, I think that's limiting as opposed to thinking, this is just a radio science fiction piece.
Right.
Listen to it. Then you go back and go, people believed after the fact.
Yeah, yeah. And I can see where they believed it.
Yeah, there are parts that are pretty believable. But I think that's going to wrap up today's episode of Tuned In Podcast with me, John Sherburn, and...
Justin Ketchai.
If you'd like to contact us and follow us, like, ski, review, comment, subscribe... Shake your tail feathers. Where can they find us, Justin?
So on Twitter and Facebook, you can find us at Tuned In Pod. And also, we are freshly announcing via podcast the creation of our Instagram account, which is a little bit different in the username. It is at tunedin.podcast.
Ooh, very fresh, new. Run by the auspicious Justin Ketchai.
The social media star.
He's going to post pictures, videos. He's going to sell his dirty underwear. All of it and more can be found on our
so
Instagram
different.
Account.
You imagine?
yeah, dude, I could. Selling these, $10 a pair, just ran at the gym.
Big hole in like the leg. Not
God.
Even like, yeah. There's no reason for there to be a hole
Oh,
there.
God. You're putting weight on your leg. How long is your underwear?
No, man? I mean,
you're
like, there's a hole in the trunk of the...
The trunk?
Yeah, it's just weird.
I love it. I love the ending of these podcasts. We always delve into some weird bullshit.
Or the beginning. Last podcast was a wild card.
Yeah, it's fair. Last podcast,
good
I'm sorry, guys. Last podcast was great. What, so, from your girlfriend individually as the only...
No, but also from me. I liked it. I think
so
it's
getting good reviews means you and your significant other. You as a host bias, and then the host's girlfriend. That was
half
the review.
Creativity here. I think I should have some say.
Oh my God.
Bye.
Yeah, that's it. Good night.
Bye. Oh, it's really dark.
It's really
dark.